other extreme injustices in Cambodia, Afghanistan, and Vietnam. Over the past 3 years, Hagar's base of support has grown throughout the United States through foundation, individual, and church giving. Prior to joining Hagar, Jane had 11 years of experience in fundraising and grant writing for other organizations. Her educational background includes a Bachelor's of Arts degree in Anthropology from McAllister and a Master of Science in Education from University of Wisconsin. And she speaks widely on the worldwide scourge of human trafficking and the work of Hagar International. Please join me in welcoming Jane Toffel.
Well, hello. It's I think I'm going to be stooping for an hour and 15 minutes if I don't change this. So there we go. Okay. It's great to be here. And I'm going, those of you that were here last night, I'm going to start my top, well, I shouldn't say my top reason, but one of my top reasons of saying it's great to be here is, like Sarah Groves, I come from the land that was 25 below zero yesterday. And when I flew out from Wisconsin on Thursday morning, my plane was actually an hour late taking off because it wouldn't start. And that was a first for me. But it's also wonderful to be here because I love the passion in this Bay Area. And I am located in Wisconsin as our headquarters, but I travel a lot. And this, I've got to say, is one of my favorite places to come because the passion is palpable in the Bay Area. And I say that with knowledge from across the country. So you should all feel good about that, and I think seeing this sanctuary at its fullness last month and this morning really confirms that. How exciting. And I was really excited as well that this conference was going to be an action-oriented conference. You know, Betty Ann said from the start, we're done with just having people learn. Let's get them out there and let's get them acting and making a difference. And I got to tell you, I'm actually very thrilled that this room filled up too, because I didn't really know what to expect with this particular topic. In fact, the first part of my slides, you'll soon see, is to really convince you that this is something very important to the anti-trafficking effort. And I almost feel now that those first slides may be preaching to the choir because you all showed up. But truly, regardless of what you do in your 9-to-5 work, it doesn't matter if you're a teacher, an attorney, if you work in a store, if you're a stay-at-home mom, if you have friends, if you have families, if you have passion, you can do this. You can add to the anti-trafficking movement in a really, really important, measurable way. So I think it's just super that you're all here. And the other thing that I want us all to kind of reflect on, we have a lot of community members here that are looking for their way in. How can I get involved in this effort? But we also have a lot of professionals here among the many, many people. We have many organizations represented here, a ton of expertise. And if we really think about where these professionals that do work on this effort in their 9-to-5 life, in most cases, their salary is dependent on charitable giving. And there are a few exceptions. Luckily, our police departments don't have to depend on charitable giving. But for the most part, if you walk around the expo room, there's a lot of great work being represented, and it's people like you that are paying their salaries. I'm joined for this weekend with a special colleague all the way from Cambodia, Sue Hanna, who's here. And she can certainly tell you from firsthand experience, you know, we think we have a dynamite model. We know it works. We've got wonderful staff. But it all comes down to what is the funding? You know, how is the flow into the bank account? So this is important stuff. And again, I'm really glad that you're here. So I'm going to start out with this data that I've kind of seen little snippets of this in my professional life, but in preparing for this session, it was fun to draw up and bring together as much of it, or really look more closely at it. The kind of influence that you have as people with friends, family, and passion. So this is one study. Convio is an online fundraising kind of company, does many, many things. And they looked at what influences people's giving online. 44% said the website influenced it, 40% word of mouth, 27% email from the organization, 28% postal mail from the organization, and then 25% what family and friends say on social media and in personal email. So those ones highlighted in red, those are you. That's everybody here in this room. Another study by Russ Reed, which is a fundraising company based just a little bit north of LA, they found that in making giving decisions, 62% of people go to the charity website, 56% search the web, very high number, 46% talk to a friend that already supports the organization, and 44% check the overhead. So here's the question, one of the questions is, who has more influence? Is it you, all of you sitting here today? Or is it Angelina Jolie, Bono, Sheryl Crow, Gwyneth Paltrow, or Ellen DeGeneres, to name a few celebrities? And this is something that I might add, I hear a lot. I hear it from out in the community, or I hear it from some unnamed board members who might say, you know, what Hagar really needs is to get a celebrity out there. We need to get some famous person out there talking about Hagar. But this survey showed, with the question, what is most likely to influence your decision to support a charity? Top of the list, 77% is family, 64% friends, organization itself, 63%. And by the way, I'm reading this because I know we're being recorded. I know that you can read these yourself, but they can't. Places of worship, 60%, coworkers, 40%, and companies, 30%. So again, it's all of you in this room that are at the top two and 40% for the coworkers. Lots of influence. So back to the question of who has more influence and where do celebrities rank in that? Celebrities are way at the bottom. 15% of donors indicate that they were persuaded, they were influenced by an endorsement by a celebrity. Someone I trust is involved in the cause was influential to 78% of people with this particular study. So hopefully that you can find as somewhat of a motivating factor that you really can make a difference through efforts in this area. I can tell you too that as a professional fundraiser, it is a little bit daunting when we see where the organization's information systems and website and so forth fall on the scheme of things, but it's also very encouraging. Hagar, just real briefly, has been serving in Cambodia since 1994. We have a very new effort to raise awareness and funds within the United States. States. So we have a very small office. And this is a very big country. So we have been trying our best to empower and engage and motivate people like you to help us in this effort. And all of this data just really accentuates and confirms that it's a very effective means for going forward. So some basic things, if you do want to go forward with being a volunteer fundraiser for your favorite organization, these are some basic things that I'm just going to breeze through right now, and then we're going to go in a little more in depth in some of them. You know, first of all, you have to be able to articulate your passion. And like with almost everything we do in life, you're going to get better at this the more you do it and the more you practice. And we're going to do a little tiny bit of specific practice of that here yet this morning. And then the second thing, there are some legal things to be aware of. You really should know the legal status of your favorite organization before you get too far in this. 501c3 organization is a specific tax category, which most likely your favorite organization falls under this category. What this means is that when people write a check or donate to the organization, they can legally take the tax deduction. It also means that in order to be granted this, the organization did go through some processing, has proven they have some systems in place, has to file certain tax documents on an annual basis, and that's why people get a tax deduction when they donate. So that's an important piece for you to know. I'd also would mention, talk to the organization before you get too far into this. My opinion as a representative of one organization is go for it. We depend on you, but I would certainly talk to your organization and see what kinds of encouragements or questions they may have before you get too far along. Then I think it also begs us to just consider for a moment the logistics of handling money and donations, to give that some thought. How are you going to do that? You obviously don't want to have a lot of cash on hand. You obviously have no intention of doing anything fraudulent or improper, but we also want to be careful that there's no appearance of that. And so there would be certain ways to put that, to be more assured and more transparent, and just to give a little attention to that, that people are entrusting you with their money, and you and the organization needs to know how that's being handled. And then the final one is something that we're going to spend a little more time on. What if you just really, really, really hate the idea of asking for money? You know, this isn't going to work. And so what are you going to do about it? And so I am going to suggest that you find some ways to get over that and to look at the whole fundraising process in a new light if that last bullet point really speaks to you. So if you are kind of stuck on the I can't ask people for money, just reflect for a moment. Do you ever talk about your favorite TV programs with your social circles? Do you talk about, oh, you should try this restaurant? Or you should go, this is a great new clothing store. Well, especially in those last two examples, what are you doing? I mean, you're suggesting they go spend their money on particular restaurants, on particular material goods. You're already telling them what to do with their money. And if you feel strongly about an anti-trafficking organization, I would like you to empower you to go out and speak as strongly and as encouraging and as motivating to get people involved with their charitable giving. And part of that is just realizing that people do want to make a difference. Obviously, you know, this weekend is a great example of that. And once people realize that giving and supporting already in process excellent work, that is an action. Don't ever, you know, I guess one of the comments that irks me in my work is when I hear, I want to do something more than just give money. You know, as if giving money is not an important thing to do. I can understand the wanting to do other things as well, but let's never underestimate the power of charitable giving. There is so much that is done throughout the world through only because of people like all of us give from our hearts and support good work. So, and most people do want to give, but they really just don't know where to give and how to do it. Okay, but it's also important to reflect on the point that how you ask and how you get involved with this really does depend on your own attitudes towards giving. That's a fact. And I would just ask you to reflect for a moment on donations that you have made. Gifts that you have given financially to organizations, be them small, be them large, you know, how did you feel about it? Was it a negative thing? Did it make you feel bad inside? Or did it make you feel good? You know, was it an empowering thing? And again, I'd invite you just to think for a moment, you know, was there, if you had to think of one meaningful financial gift that you've made, what was it? And how did it make you feel? And I'd even invite, if there's somebody that wants to just share real quickly a very short experience of giving, not even what it was, but I think we'd love to hear it. Is there anybody that... does have something in their experience that really stands out for them? Yes.
Both in the giving, it's so difficult to choose because there are so many great organizations. Mm-hmm. And I really had to hone in on, like, okay, the trafficking aspect and various things that have to do with that are really where my heart and my passion is. And so my husband and I budget out a certain amount of money that I get to decide, gives me the freedom to decide each month where that money's going to go. And so I've kind of honed it into various
Yeah, it's a beautiful thing, and it's empowering on all sides. And I think it's important for us to keep that in mind and reflect on that. And I guess before I got into this field, I really didn't realize that to its full extent either. And I can tell you personally, I take so much more joy in giving now than I ever did. It's wonderful. For those of you that come with a faith perspective, there's certainly a very strong connection there as well. There's a little book by a man named Henry Nouwen called The Spirituality of Fundraising. This is one of my favorite quotes, and I have it right up at my desk to remind me every day. Those who need money and those who can give money meet on the common ground of God's love. So if that speaks to you, do write it down and remember it. And at this point, I'll also mention, if anybody wants to get these slides emailed later, just give me your email address. I'd be happy to do that, and I can probably give you... What's that? Okay.
I think they will be posting, if you're making them available.
Oh, oh, that's even easier. Okay.
On the Freedom website.
Okay.
Maybe in about a month.
Okay. And the other thing that I can find is there, I think we can find access to this little booklet online, so I'll find that also if you contact me. It's a really nice little booklet. It's on the last slide, so, okay. Okay, so back to the practice and back to being able to articulate your passion, because, you know, the people who are here, the 1,700 people here, are they get it, but, you know, I'm guessing that not everybody else in your social and family and work circles do. So my recommendation is that you develop an elevator speech that you have in your pocket ready to go at any opportunity. Now, I was talking to my husband about this presentation, and I mentioned that I was going to be having you write an elevator speech, and he was like, well, what's an elevator speech? I thought everybody knew what that was, but apparently not. The idea is if you find yourself in an elevator with somebody and have an opportunity to pitch whatever it is you want to pitch, you want to have a really concise, effective way to get that pitch out. So it can be, it's designed to be 2 minutes at most, which should take you, depending on the elevator, hopefully... up a few, hopefully it's a rather slow elevator. I know some elevators these days go up pretty quickly. But, you know, and if it's not at the in the elevator, it could be at the bus stop. It could also be called a busy friend speech, because you may have friends that just aren't going to sit there and listen to you talk about your favorite anti-trafficking organization for more than 2 minutes. If you don't hook them in 2 minutes, you're not going to get them to go forward with you. So this is a little formula or template for an effective elevator speech. And this template actually comes from a book that I really like. You might want to write down as well. It's by Terry Axelrod, A-X-E-L-R-O-D, and it's called The Point of Entry Handbook. And it's all about bringing people along to your cause, whether you have 2 minutes, whether you have an hour, whether you have a few hours. So this is the two-minute version. And so we're going to start with the name of the organization. And I think number two, the second bullet point, is an important one. You know, what are three things this person needs to know to get it? You know, and especially if you're talking about talking with people that they don't even know human trafficking happens, you're going to have to find a way to kind of get that in at the start. So three things they need to know. Three programs or three things that the organization does, not any more than that. Even if they do 100 things, you're going to focus on three. Why I'm involved, and a story. And it's the last two that are really going to get your listener, because that's going to be the emotional hook. And we're going to have an example elevator speech now from my esteemed colleague, Sue Hanna. And I'll just put in a plug. She's going to be talking about our model of aftercare at 1:30 today. And you'll hear her at 4:30 with the closing piece as well. But I asked her to prepare an elevator speech, so I'll be timing you.
Okay, it's dangerous, always dangerous, to give me a microphone. I'm mouth looking for ears, and look at all the ears in this room, you know? You just made my day, people. My elevator speech. I love Hagar, Hagar Cambodia. Hagar's been going since 1994, and so they really know what they're doing. They care for boys and children and girls and women who've been victims of trafficking, and they provide extensive care for those people to get them back into community. Three things they do: they run recovery shelters, and they have very high-quality well-trained counselors who counsel in the model of TFCBT, trauma-focused cognitive behavior therapy. They run career pathways for women after they've been rescued and they've gone through their counseling to get them back into employment and jobs. They run catch-up programs for children who've been behind in their schooling so they can be catch up to their grade and move on back into community. Why am I involved? Because I absolutely love it. When I think about what would Jesus do if he was here in 2011, this is the kind of work that Jesus would be doing. So that's why I'm involved, because it has my heart. I see the results. I see the good work. I see young people going from desperate situations and becoming resilient young people who are really going to make a change and a nation changes in this world. And I can never forget the story and sitting in a run-down, dirty hospital with a girl of 16 years of age who died overnight of HIV/AIDS, and she was sold at 11. And the story and the emotion of that moment will never leave me. And I can never forget that, and I don't want to forget it, because it's what motivates me to be involved with Hagar Cambodia. Ding, ding! Level 10.
Well said. Well, I'm kind of struggling with whether I should turn you loose to work on your own speech for a few minutes. I think what I'm going to do is go through this, and if we have time, because it's going to take you more than a few minutes to really get it right. But I really encourage you to come back to it, because I think this is really key for everything else that is going to make you an effective fundraiser. So some of the actual actions that you can take and ways forward, many of them are just integrated into your everyday daily life. Like the data showed, start talking to your friends and family about your passions and use that elevator speech. Social media. I think we're already doing that too, right? At least maybe 90% of us in this room. And social media in the form of Facebook and Twitter hasn't really been shown to be actual fundraisers. Like, people don't really, you know, immediately click and give money. But as the data showed, what they do is they keep the passion building, they provide the information, and they get people thinking about which causes they will later come back to and that they will support financially. Another thing that you're already doing is you're on your email, and you probably are getting emails from your favorite anti-trafficking organizations. If Hagar is one of yours, you're getting emails from us, and simply forwarding them on, or not so simply, writing a little portion of your elevator speech as you forward it on so that your friends and family know why you think it's important and why you hope that in the barrage of daily email they will take the time to read this that you're sending on can make a big difference. We had a tremendous difference made through this a while back for Hagar when we had an opportunity to get a matching grant through Global Giving. I don't know if anybody of you know that. It's an online site. And anyway, they gave us the opportunity to attract matching funds for about a three-week period. And so I sent out an email to our list. And I use an email system called Constant Contact. There's many of them. They're all, I'm sure, pretty much the same. After I send the email, I can go into the system in the back and look and see who opened my email. And I can also see if John Smith forwards an email to a friend, I can see it opened again, but it says John Smith again. And so I would send out an email, and then I would go in there, and I'd see John Smith would be listed like 30 times, and Mary Jones would be listed, you know, 50 times. And it just went like this for 3 weeks. And at that time, Hagar USA was even newer than we are now. We didn't have much of a list. And I was just mesmerized by it because it was a great opportunity to get these matching funds one-to-one. It was a project that was actually at risk because it didn't have funding. And in 3 weeks' time, all I did was send out three emails. And at the end of 3 weeks, we raised $60,000. And it wasn't because of what I did. It was all those John Smiths and Mary Jones. And if I didn't have that way of going in the back and looking and seeing that, I would have had no idea. But it was a very encouraging thing to see. It was the power of all of you who receive these emails from your favorite anti-trafficking organizations. So another thing you can do is there's some great online systems now, and I'm going to just show you a couple things. Person-to-person fundraising is something that is now available to us in the electronic age, and it's a really easy way to help raise funds. So I'll talk more about that. Or, of course, you can plan an event. A lot of people like to plan clever, fun events to raise funds. Whoopsie, I'm missing. There we go. So I just put a list here together. I'm guessing that many of you can come up with more ideas. I'll just read a few of them for the listening audience. You know, a coin drive, a food sale, an auction, a benefit dance, talent contest, walk or run, etc. And I'm guessing, you know, many of you have done these kinds of things and raised funds for your favorite anti-trafficking or other organizations. I would also mention we have a more complete list of these kinds of ideas at our table in the Expo Center if you want to stop by there. But actually, they're the kinds of ideas that you can pull off the internet and aren't too difficult to find. So if you enjoy planning these kinds of events and getting people engaged, you are welcome to do that. Personally, I believe it is far more, in many cases, it is far less time and work on your part to just focus more on sharing your passion and giving people the opportunity to make a gift that truly has the capacity to change lives. The runs and the tournaments and so, they can be fun and they can raise awareness, but they can also divert the attention to the attention more to the running, walking, fun part. And I think it's also important to bring that into, attention to the cause and to the power of supporting this work with financial contributions. So one suggestion we have is a simple home-based event. We have a document on our website. It's called Dining for Hagar. It's a packet of how to go about and do this step by step, but it's dining for whatever you want to put in there, your favorite organization. So in brief, you'll be using your elevator speech to tell people about the organization and to invite them to come and spend an evening or an afternoon with you. And telling them at the front end that I'm going to be giving you dessert or making you dinner, sharing with you about this organization I feel very, very passionately about, and I'm going to ask you to make a donation. And again, if you want to equate this with going out to dinner, and if you go out to dinner, what do you pay in the Bay Area? I know you pay more than we pay in Wisconsin. So perhaps, you know, you can equate it that way, whatever you're comfortable with. But the suggestion would be to be upfront that this is a point of us coming together. And I'm very excited to share something that's very important to me. What we have found with people who do simple home-based events is great enthusiasm. They're greatly encouraged by their friends. They find it a very meaningful yet simple thing to do. One young woman, this was a quote from her, one of the things I learned is that being an advocate or teaching others is the best way to learn about a subject you are passionate about. So by having her own little dining event, she felt like she elevated her knowledge and understanding of why it is important to support work of this kind. And just another simple quote that at the end of the evening, I felt good about all of the women and children I knew I helped. I would do it again. So then these online people-to-people fundraising tools, there's a couple of them that I'm going to highlight here. One of them is called First Giving. If you go out to firstgiving.org, you will find it. Now, if your organization is a 501c3, you will plug the name of it into this bar here, and it'll pop up. Now, whether or not anybody else from that organization has ever even heard of First Giving, your organization will pop up. And what you can do then is you can create a little bit of a page with a little bit of a pitch of why you want people to contribute. You can set a goal. I want to raise $500. I want to raise $2,000. And you will then enter the email addresses of your friends and family that you want to invite to join with you in this cause. Now, one of the beautiful things about this is that if you do have a little vestige of not liking to ask people for money, it is easier to do it via email. But you will, you know, I would encourage you to layer on a little bit of phone calling or personal face-to-face interaction, telling people perhaps that this is coming their way. You can also be strategic about it and think of somebody in your networks who you know will come alongside and ask them to make a gift at about the amount that you think the rest of your social network and those you're inviting in will also be apt to give at. So if you have somebody that puts in the first gift at $5, guess what you're going to get for the next 10? You know, you're probably going to get averaging about $5. On the other hand, if you have get a first gift of $1,000, which will be wonderful, but as far as bringing along the rest of your circle, they may feel intimidated and they may not get involved and take that step at all. So I would encourage you, if you're using First Giving, to be a little strategic that way. And there's great power in subtle peer pressure that way, because First Giving will actually show donations that have already come in for your cause. Now, another great thing about using these vehicles is getting back to one of those initial slides when I said, you know, give a little thought to, you are handling people's money and the logistics of that and so forth. This is all very secure, obviously, and very automatic. Your favorite organization will get bank deposits on a regular basis from those who are using these tools to support them. So you're totally out of that accountability loop. Another one that is similar is Razoo. Actually, I would say this is my personal favorite. I just really kind of like the way it looks. You feel like a webmaster when you go in there. You can set up something pretty cool. You can add your own pictures, and it's very, very easy to do. One thing that is different about Razoo is that you will not see, it'll tell you how many people have donated and what the amount of total donations from your effort is, but it will not show the list of donations, which you may like better, you may like worse. That's sort of a personal preference. But again, like First Giving, if your organization is a 501c3, you'll just put the name in and it'll pop up. And some of them will already, let's see what my next slide is. Oops. Yes.
They
do, and that is also a deciding factor. Razu, any time you pay with a credit card, you know, in life, a percentage is taken out. So giving online always has that. Razu has the absolute minimum. So that's another reason that I really like Razu. First Giving will take, I'm not exactly sure what it is, but it is a higher percentage. It might be 10, 12%. Okay. Let me just check here that I've shared everything that I meant to share before we move on to the next major topic. Oh, the one other thing about Razu I just wanted to mention real quickly in case you're really closely connected with an organization that might have a website but doesn't have a way to receive credit card payments, because that is a challenge for grassroots starting out organizations. Razu is a beautiful, brilliant solution to that. There is a way to connect to Razu and to have a widget on your web page, and they've got all kinds of really great tools. And Razu is just really out there to serve all of us in charity work. They get coverage for their overheads and so forth. So they're stellar. I really like Razu. So that's just a tip if you're connected with an organization that would like to have a way to take credit card payments. They can do it really easily this way, and then they'll just get monthly deposits in their bank account. Okay, I'm going to go switch topics a little bit. Yes. It's about 2.5 or 3. Oh, I'm sorry. What the percentage with Razu? Actually, until a couple months ago, they were totally overwritten. They weren't taking anything, which is, you know, unheard of because credit cards always do. Yes. Well, we have PayPal on our website. It's also relatively easy for a smaller organization. There are many different ways to receive credit card donations, and I'm not an expert on deciding among them, but for a very small new organization, I would definitely recommend they look at Razu. Okay, well, if this presentation was called Fundraising 101, I would say it's grant writing like 23 or something. I mean, it's very minimal. I'm going to give you minimal information about grant writing. It was suggested that this could be rolled into one presentation, and I thought that was fine, and I'm just going to kind of tell you what I think those who want to help their favorite organizations raise funds can know about grant writing and where you may fit in there, assuming that you don't have grant writing experience, which may not be the case of some of you in the room. But again, we're going to start out with the question, is your favorite organization a 501c3? Because if it isn't, nobody really wants to write a check to you on individual basis, and same goes with getting a grant. So that's I'm going to go forward assuming that we're talking about 501c3 organizations. Now there can be some exceptions to that. Sometimes you can give through a church, or you can give through another 501c3 will receive funds for a new and small organization, but that's something that you have to look into and find out before you get too far along. And then the second point is just extremely important to understand that we're talking about a serious legal contract when you do get a grant award. So this is not something for volunteers to go off on their own and making promises for an organization to keep. But I will take you through some scenarios of things that perhaps you can contribute to the grants effort of your organization. There are many different kinds of granting entities, and so when you talk about an organization being funded by grants, it's just, it could be many, many different things. Of course, the U.S. government gives grants, which are usually large and usually or always require very, very specific recording accuracy, unless you are somebody who has worked in the federal grant area, you probably wouldn't dabble in this as a volunteer. There are also a lot of large foundations that we all know of that are, you know, household words like Gates and MacArthur and so forth. And they give to very specific causes, and usually they give to efforts that have a very broad reach, making broad-based impact. That also, unless you have specific expertise or friends in the right places, you probably wouldn't get too involved with that as a volunteer. But then there are also small family foundations, community foundations. There's local corporate giving, grants through things like the local Target and the local... who else does that? There's a number of them that are all over the country that give in their particular geographic area. Now, if you are a local or your favorite organization is a locally serving organization, these family foundations in your town or the community foundation in your city or the corporate giving vehicles like Walmart is one I was trying to think of, they may be real good opportunities to get some funding. So my following subsequent slides here will really mostly address that. And with a community-based or a family foundation, as an individual community member, volunteer, just thinking about who do you know, who do the people you know, and getting to the decision makers in these foundations. Every foundation will have a board, and those board members' names are public if you dig for them, and that can be a huge help to your organization if you can find a connection to somebody related to decision-making about funding. And just real briefly, clearly the reason to get grants is that they can come in much bigger amounts than individual donations in many cases. Another area that as a volunteer you may be able to help with is researching what is available for your particular organization, whether you're doing that research online or research in your community. Then, just very, very simply, I'm going to talk through what some kind of basic grant writing principles. If you are a volunteer with a small organization or you're on the board of a grassroots organization, you really might want to get involved with trying your hand and getting some proposals out there. And that's great. If you're a good writer, if you're a clear, logical thinker, it can be a great avenue. And most people just learn to do it by doing it, and you can be one of those people. My personal thinking about grant writing, I've never heard anybody else make this analogy, but I think about it all the time, is that grant writing is so similar to resume writing, that getting a grant is just so similar to getting a job. And I try to convey that when I work with staff that are assisting with the grant writing process. If we start at the top here, I mean, there needs to be a fit. You've got to make sure that what you want to do and the granting entity is interested in doing is well aligned, and it's just like with a job. I mean, you don't if you don't have the credentials, if you've never worked in the field, why on earth would you take the time to apply for the job? We can relate to that, but with grant writing, I often hear from people wanting to get into it that, well, you know, they're interested in X, and our program isn't too far off that, so, you know, maybe we could get them interested in what we want to do. Well, don't waste your time. If the fit isn't there, it's not a good prospect. Also, you know, with job hunting, we're told to rewrite that resume for every job. It's got to specifically address that job. So sending out proposals, a proposal should never go out twice looking the same. There's always going to be some way that you can tailor that proposal, just like that resume, to highlight what is important for that particular opportunity. The shotgun approach just doesn't work. You can send out a lot of resumes, you can send out a lot of proposals. It's not going to work in either scenario. And then a human being intermediary can be very helpful. So just like you want to get somebody inside that employer, prospective employer, to get to know you, to kind of pave the pathway for you so that you're not just sending a cold resume, same with the granting entity. If you can find somebody within that organization that you can talk to, that you can craft a little bit of a relationship with, so your proposal, just like your resume, stands out a little bit when it comes through the door, that's important. And then you need to be scrupulously honest. You know, with a resume, you can get really in bad trouble if you kind of embellish the truth. And the same thing with a grant proposal. There's just no way around it. You can highlight the most applicable information and highlight what's important in their eyes about what your organization does, just like when you apply for a job. I mean, I've been a teacher and a waitress and a fundraiser are three things I've done. Well, if I'm applying for a job in fundraising, I'm not going to tell them anything about the waitress and maybe just a little bit about the teaching. And that's fine, as long as you're being, you know, you're scrupulously honest and nothing is not being disclosed what they are asking for. You can highlight what is important. And then again, you know, another analogy to me or similarity is there's just very little margin of error. If you have some typos, if you didn't follow directions, if you have some goofy formatting gaffe, they're just gonna, you know, you're pretty much going to deflate your chances big time. Yes?
One comment about that, because I think you still call a nonprofit. Mm-hmm.
Oh, wow. I'm just going to quickly repeat that for our radio listeners, is that he worked for an organization where they had a perfect proposal that was funded, but they had left 10 off. And there was no going back. The legal contract was in place, and he lost his job because there was no funding for him. So that is that is a very sad story. Pay attention to the zeros. And then just quickly, research I mentioned is something you might want to help with. Of course, our internet provides all kinds of assists for everything we want to do these days, including researching grants. And this website, foundationcenter.org, can be a good place to start. They have a little online system that is free. You can just go out there, and I think it works best if you know the name of a foundation, you want to find out a little bit about it, you can put it in there and you'll get it. If you want to find out more about it, of course, though, you have to pay. But most public libraries have a subscription to Foundation Center, and you can go in and use it for free. Another thing you can do if you want to do it cheaply at home, they charge by a monthly fee, so you can pay for a month. You can go in and do all your research and get out and not have to pay a second time. So, and there are other systems like this, but I think this is kind of one of the bigger ones that would be good for people trying to help out as volunteers. And the idea here would be to put in some key terms, human trafficking, or whatever, it's just like any search engine. And location, you can find out who they give to, you can look at their financial information, and so forth. Then if you want to become more of a grant writer and acquire some skills personally, there are many ways to do that as well. Most people just pick it up through practice and going to trainings and workshops and getting gradually more adept at it. And one organization that does provide a lot of training and some online stuff, you can get on their email list and find out when they're coming to a community near you, is this Grantsmanship Center. So that's tgci.com. Okay, well, just I thought at the final wrap-up, I would just mention a few other things. When people approach our office and want to help and engage in the United States, and another few things that we offer people to do is, which again is helping us bring more funding to some really good work that is going on in the field with trafficking victims, is through some of these things. You know, we got to get promotional materials together. We've had some excellent graphic artists who have stepped up and created some pieces for us. And every dollar we save from doing that, we get to send to the field. IT help. Websites are huge. Search engine optimization, a lot of little techie things that small new organizations just don't typically have the expertise for. And you guys here in the Silicon Valley should. Somebody in this room should. And that would be a great way to serve. I was going to show you a quick video clip, but we tested it, and with the internet in this room and an audio challenge as well, it doesn't work out well enough to take the time to show you. But my point was, I had taken just a small, my daughter's little handheld video camera and videotaped a staff person last time I was in Cambodia telling why she thought people should give to Hagar. And I think it's a really compelling little piece, and it's, if I can do it, anybody can do it. You know, you post it on YouTube. It did require some editing, but if you know anybody who's under 25 years old, I will tell you they can edit it for you. So it's a really easy thing to do. If you go to our website, we have a number of little clips. In fact, we have Sue in a similar little clip with a handheld camera that I think gets the message across well, and you can do that for your favorite anti-trafficking organization. And so here's the final slide with my contact information, and I do invite you to contact me if you want more information. We heard that perhaps the slides are all going to be posted, and if they are, that would be one way. But if you do want me to email them to you, I would be happy to do that. I think it's a file that I can email. I sent it to somebody else. So now we do have 15 more minutes. This is where they wanted me to stop and turn it over to you if you have questions. Yes. Well, at that time, you know, I'm really not sure. We have 3,000 now, and I'm sure I'm guessing we had about 1,000 at most. Yes. Oh, I'm sorry. Let me just repeat the question. His question was, how many did I have on our email list at the time they told the story of the matching the $60,000. Yes, and we had about 1,000, I'm guessing. We do not serve women and children in the States. We are in Cambodia, Afghanistan, and Vietnam. So Hagar USA is a 501c3 that was created to do exactly this, so that we could legally fundraise and send the money to our field countries. Yep. Okay, the question is whether our organization is having more success with grants or with individuals. That's a really good question. When we first started, our grant revenues were miles above our individuals. We had a really great response from Christian foundations, which is kind of another or a subcategory of foundations. If you're a Christian organization, there is a very large network giving to faith-based or Christian groups. So that really got us out of the gate really well and quickly a few years ago. Building individual donors has taken longer, but I'm happy to say that at the end of this year, 2010, we had triple the amount from individuals that we had in 2009. So we were very happy with that, and it is growing. Yes. Good question. How do you suggest dealing with rejections? Because that's something I didn't mention, and I probably should have. Of course, it is going to be a part of this. You're going to not get enthusiastic yes answers from 100% of the people that you want to commit, want to encourage to give to your organization. And I guess I would use maybe the job hunting analogy a little bit with that too. There are things we do in life that we have to learn to let kind of roll off our back. And I think for me, the yeses are so empowering and encouraging. And the interest that I see, I really think that helps to take care of the rejections. Everybody's different and every situation is different, and you know, it depends on how much rejection you're getting too, how hard that's going to be. Yes.
Do you think it's effective to ask people their feedback on your request?
Yeah, I think so. If you can do it in a casual, comfortable way, why not? You know, you probably want to kind of pick and choose. Do you mean individuals that you've asked to? I would, if you are in a one-on-one kind of fundraising situation and somebody, I would never take a flat no. I would want to find out why. Yeah. Yes. Okay, the question is, how tight were the regulations, or are the regulations on grants that we have, and did we ever reject one because of that? I don't think I, in my experience, have ever rejected one, but it could be not a bad move if you had something come back at you that was just, I mean, you got to be true to what you want to do, and I think a lot of that is how you put the proposal together, and if you don't feel you're being true at that point, that would be the time, in my mind, to abort the process. I've never had a surprise come back to me. And what was the first part of your question? How tight. Okay, well, that is an interesting question, too, and it's all over the board. It really is. The government is going to be the tightest, and so we're really, with this volunteer effort, we're not even talking about government grants. I mean, there's no wiggle room with the government, and nor should there be, I don't think. It makes sense that they're the tightest, but with foundations, it varies across the board. Some of them will only want a couple paragraphs of a narrative at the end of the year.
Others will pepper us with questions, you know, on more than a quarterly basis. So you get to know them, and you can find out at the forefront. We just had a conversation, was it yesterday or the day before, with a foundation that'll be new to our organization. And, you know, we had that talk. And, you know, what is it going to be like once we are partnering together? And they gave us kind of the scenario. So it's good to understand that it can be problematic, or it can be a really, really wonderful relationship. Yes. Well, funny you should ask. I do get some kind of an unsolicited email from some Christian foundation something that I've never really figured out what it is. I think you have to pay to find out more. Certainly, like any of these online systems, if you put in, I think you could probably put in the word Christian, you could put in religious. I don't think that there is a comprehensive list of the Christian foundations in the United States. In fact, I know there isn't, because I am, you know, I'm keenly interested in finding it myself if there is one, and I am forever being surprised by learning about others that I'd never heard of before. Through personal contact, for the most part. Foundations will introduce their friends once they're our friends. There are certain gatherings of representatives of Christian foundations, and getting access to that is one way. So it's a lot of investigation and networking. Networking is a huge part of the grants effort. Yes. Yeah, I've heard of it, but I got to tell you, I don't know much about it.
Like, basically, it started in 2003. I don't think eBay was pushing it as much as it is now. But right now, now it's on the front page. And if you list an auction that you're giving away to you're donating to, you put a little ribbon there to kind of get some people aware that there are auctions going on. Like, is it people can even buy from auctions that are solely for giving, give anywhere from 10 to 100%. And their database of
Yeah, that's something certainly to look into. There is a overabundance of online opportunities, and you're just going to have to figure out which ones appeal to you, which ones you have time to pursue, and which ones pay off for your particular organization. But that's a good tip. Okay, well, I will be around, so if you have any other questions, feel free to ask.
Thank you, Jane. So we're breaking now for lunch. Lunch is on the patio, I think, behind the sanctuary building, and at 1:30, we'll convene with your next sessions. Okay?